Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and that can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And good evening, Fran. And we, as you mentioned, Dr. Heath will be with us at the break, and she's both an MD and a doctorate in psychology.
Yes, she would be calling her Dr. Doctor.
Yeah, maybe. Kind of a sad day here, and as you know, my Uncle Larry passed away early this morning, and What I didn't get a chance to tell you, actually, Fran, is that when I was speaking with my father, he was telling me that Uncle Larry was unconscious for the last 3 days, and his three sons were with him early this morning, and about 15 minutes before he passed, he awoke, and all the sons were able to tell him that they loved him, and, you know, he was conscious, you know, for that period of time, and then he drifted off and passed away, you know. So it's not the first time we've heard that.
And we think this is a wonderful opportunity when, you know, there's that one last moment to be there, be aware, and be able to say your goodbyes and I love you and see you later.
Yeah, and there's no medical explanation for it, you know, why?
Well, that's the problem. We keep looking for medical explanations, and medicine doesn't have all the answers. And until the doctors start to admit that, you know, and just say, "I don't know," but it happens every single time, and accept it. You know, we're always trying to put that square peg in the round hole. Isn't that going to happen?
Yeah, it certainly seems like the universe sort of conspires or arranges for that one last chance, you know, and to, for everybody to say goodbye. And it really is a wonderful thing. We watched this documentary. We just happened upon it last week as I was switching through the channels, and you recall it was the Four Seasons Lodge.
Oh, right.
Actually, I think
in the Catskills.
Yeah, I caught the at the end in the credits. I think there is a website, fourseasonslodge.com. But I don't know why it struck a chord. It's a documentary about Holocaust survivors, and there were the 26 families. Actually, I guess there were probably 26 couples, you know, that had survived the Holocaust, each one with their own individual, you know, horrors, most of their families, you know, being wiped out. And they collectively purchased this old, you know, bungalow colony in the Catskills in New York, upstate New York. And they would gather there every summer. And they would sing and they would dance and they, you know, would enjoy themselves. And there was the first thing that struck me is the bond. There was an unbelievable bond, as if they were all brothers and sisters, and we can certainly relate to it. You know, people that have, for instance, people that have lost children, you know, feel a bond with each other, or people that have lost spouses, you know, get together and they feel a bond with each other.
Well, it's true. Most support groups are based on the commonality of pain.
Yeah, and the fact that these are the only people that can truly understand, you know, the way that you feel, you know, because these other people all, you know, walked in your shoes. But, it also struck me the attitude of a lot of these people. You know, some of the people, I remember there was one man that was there, and every time something would happen, he would say, well, that's the way it is, you know, that's the way it is. And I kept waiting for them as they were telling their stories to talk about the afterlife, but they really weren't, you know. They came close a few times.
Except one woman wanted to do it,
yeah.
And she kept saying, no, you guys don't want to talk about this. You guys aren't going to understand.
Right. Because they were trying to find meaning, you know. Some people hadn't talked about their experiences in 50 years, you know, and they hadn't discussed it even with their families. And others, you know, would like to talk, but they were just the opposite. You know, they wanted to talk about it. It was important, you know. It was a very, very touching documentary that struck a lot of chords. And if anybody seems to have an interest in that, you can look it up. FourSeasonsLodge.com, I believe, you know, is the documentary. A little bit later, we'll be talking, about the afterlife, of course. And, I was having some email correspondence, you know, with our guest, and we got on the subject of the afterlife, and I mentioned to her that we get a great many questions that come into the foundation, and people wanting to know what, as if we had the answers, you know, what the afterlife was like, and they usually talk about in descriptive things, you know, and Dr. Heath was mentioning that perhaps we're asking the wrong question. It's not the afterlife is not a it's not an actual place. The afterlife is more of a process, you know. It's a process of learning and experiencing. So we're going to be talking a bit about that as well.
Right. Now, and I'm excited to hear what she has to say, because the reality is you've got all of these people writing books and claiming to channel what the other side is like, and no tour alike. So what's up with that?
Well, there are some. There are a lot of similarities,
yeah. But some of them just go way out there, giving you all kinds of crazy information, you know. And everybody claims to be the authority on it, and we can't have so many authorities with so many different opinions.
Yeah. Well, why do you think so many people, you know, are craving? Because is it just a matter of wanting to know where you're going, you know, and what you?
I think that's a little bit of it, wanting to know where you're going. But what I think when you have somebody who's passed, you want to know that they're happy, that they're comfortable, that they're enjoying where they are, and so you want to know what it's like. It's kind of like when you're getting ready to travel to another country. You want to know what it's like before you even get there. You want
to get a lay of the surroundings, right? I guess it helps with fear, too, you know, because we want, you know, it helps allay some of the fears if we had a vision of what it was like.
I think maybe that's the problem with our physicality here and having been put here in this physical world with that element of fear. You know, if we can live without fear, what a free life that would be.
Mm.
And maybe that's what the other side is like, a life without fear.
That sounds good to me, and I think it's logical. We're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to get some answers from somebody that has researched this thing for quite a number of years. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Pamela Heath as we learn more about the unseen world. We'll be back in a few minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And Pamela Heath is a medical doctor. She also has a doctorate degree in psychology. Dr. Heath began having her own spontaneous psychic experiences in the early 90s. And she spent more than 15 years of investigating hauntings, spontaneous paranormal events. She's appeared on numerous television and radio shows. She's a full member of the Parapsychological Association, a member of the Society for Scientific Exploration, an associate of the Society for Psychical Research. She's published journal articles, textbook chapters. The subjects of include mind-matter interaction, place memory, experiential research, and the afterlife. Her current books include The PK Zone, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, Handbook to the Afterlife, and Mind-Matter Interaction, Historical Reports, Research, and Theory. And she has a very comprehensive website on PamelaHeath.com. Welcome, Dr. Heath.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to join you.
And it's a pleasure to have you back with us again. I guess, you know, we talk about, you know, the afterlife, and we're assuming that our consciousness survives our physical death. So then we must enter realms of thought, you know. So do you envision our thoughts as being able to manifest things or images that to us might seem to be physical in nature?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think we probably do it while we're still living, and it continues after we pass on into the afterlife or the other realm, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, it's sort of interesting. The more I have studied the afterlife, the more I've realized it's very much like life. The one difference being that because you don't have a physical body and physical sense organs, you interpret everything around you based on consciousness or how you perceive things. And, you know, psychologists can tell you, you know, even with the living, you don't necessarily perceive reality 100% accurately. You put your own spin on things. And it's even more of a problem in the afterlife of seeing what you expect to see and refusing to acknowledge what you don't believe ought to be there.
Mm. So if I, if my time comes to pass and let's say I led a very materialistic life in the physical and I didn't believe that we could possibly survive our physical death, so when I might have more trouble than somebody else that had an understanding of, let's say, of what might happen, you know, what might happen. You know, if I believe that our thoughts do survive, our consciousness does survive, am I going to have an easier time when I pass?
Yes, it's much easier. The people who really struggle are those who didn't believe, I mean, firmly did not believe there would be an afterlife.
Mm.
And they really struggle with it, partly because they still feel alive, and in some cases much better physically, or, you know, much better well-being, shall we say, than when they had a physical form. And so they can't figure out what is going on. And I've run into this. You can talk to any paranormal investigator. Everyone's run into this where you run into a spirit who is just absolutely convinced they're alive. They have no idea they're dead. And the only things they're willing or able to perceive are the living. Because they feel they're still living, there's no afterlife. So they totally block out mentally any spirits that are trying to help them. And this is where you get the spirit rescue work, you know, that comes
right
in so handy. But I've seen it many times and in multiple cultures.
Right.
I ran into this with the Navajo, for example, because they believe that the only spirits that continue into the afterlife are evil ones. And so if they don't believe they're evil, which most of them are not, and they're still have consciousness, but everybody's ignoring them and they can't figure out what's going on. It's a mess, and it can take a long time sometimes to get through these people.
Mm. It always seemed logical to me that most people would have some sort of, be in some state of confusion, you know, when they pass on, because, you know, all of a sudden you realize that you're, you know, somehow you're alive when you should be dead, you know, but I know you feel, I think from your research, that we do have help, right? I mean, do
yeah.
we? Yeah.
I feel there's always spirit guides, and I also think that, you know, in terms of whether people have trouble, I would say it depends. Because I've done a tremendous amount of reading on this. If people die in accidents or something very sudden, traumatic, murder, they have a little bit more trouble, whereas somebody who's had a long, prolonged illness may even be looking forward to passing on, or they've gotten very old. I feel like the spirits really spend time. You can get countless stories. I mean, I've heard them from, you know, people I know, I'm sure you have too, where if somebody's having a prolonged illness, they'll talk about meeting Uncle Joe in the afterlife or Aunt Sarah or whatever, and these spirits come and visit them, sometimes in dreams, sometimes in waking visions, and start explaining to them what's going to happen, and I think ease them into it. And they may have smoother transitions from the viewpoint of, you know, knowing there's people there, we're going to go with these spirit guides and, you know, meet the rest of the family, and this is going to be, you know, good. But the flip side of that is that there's a certain amount of etheric energy, I guess, that most people have, and sometimes prolonged illness can kind of sap that. So they may spend longer after the initial transition in recovery and a hospice-type setting or hospital-type setting or somewhere peaceful to sort of regain that and regroup that energy.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, when you say in a hospital-type setting...
Yeah, I shouldn't say that. It's all different type settings. It's whatever is the most soothing, peaceful, enjoyable setting for them. It typically involves a great deal of sleep. Now, once in a while, you'll see spirits, especially if they died traumatically, who are sort of stuck in a coma for a long time, and they don't make the transition right away. But that has to do, I think, more with how their consciousness is accepting the transition. Are they sort of stunned into this sort of comatose-like state? Or have they had time to adjust? Or is this part of their worldview that they can accept if a guide is able to get through to them?
Hmm. I know that we've had some email correspondence, you know.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, I was mentioning to you that a lot of people always come to us and they say, you know, what's the afterlife like? You know, give me a physical description. And I know your feeling is that this is somewhat of a mistake, you know, that the afterlife, as you mentioned, is a process, you know, not so much a place. So you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, you know, you will see it as a place when you're there, because that's how our consciousnesses are used to interpreting reality.
Right.
We're used to interpreting it as a physical place. But what I found is when you read from many different cultures, the cultural overlay, cultural expectations sort of fall out. If you sort of separate out, oh, well, these people see themselves in suburbia, and these people see themselves living in a forest, or these people see themselves on an island, whatever. You sort of, a bunch of other things sort of fall out, and you start to realize that there's a common ground of they're all going through the same process. They're interpreting their environment in the way that is most comfortable for them to interpret it, or most meaningful for them.
Right.
Now, there are some exceptions. As you become more evolved, everyone describes whatever world they're inhabiting as having more light. You know, being closer to the source, there seems to be greater light and more of this sense of love, unconditional love. And that's true. So if you want to talk about that. But what I see a lot of times is people want to know specifics, like are there marble, you know, homes of marble, and, you know, is there a throne of God and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And what the guides will say is, if you want it to be there, it'll be there. But that it's not, you know, it's not a rigid, true for everybody kind of thing. Somebody from a different culture is going to want to see and interpret things differently, and that's what they'll see. If you see us, it's sort of funny, you know, scientism is its own kind of religion. And, you know, scientists will imagine themselves living in a scientific community, you know, with other like-minded scientists and doing research.
Yeah.
So it's all a matter, I think, of what's comfortable way for your consciousness to understand and make sense of the world around you.
Right. So in a sense, you know, we all create our own afterlife experience.
Well, we all create our own life experience.
Yeah.
So why would it not continue in the afterlife?
Yeah. It always, you know, it always confused me a little bit, you know, in reading some of these channeled reports, you know, where people would describe, for instance, you know, cities, you know, with places of learning and museums and centers for the arts, and you know, if they're all manifestations of our own thoughts, you know, why would, you know, large groups of people see the same thing?
Well, because there are managed communities.
Okay.
The afterlife talks about. I know in Handbook to the Afterlife where this comes up is when we were talking about phases of rest and recovery. And initially, it's sort of that very comfortable setting, whether it's isolated or in a home, in a bedroom where you can sleep and you're surrounded by flowers or whatever. And then as you move forward and you're doing spiritual work and you need a different type of place to recover, they have managed communities they've created with different settings so that you can be in whichever setting is perhaps best for you.
Mm.
And these are managed by spirit guides, because one of the problems in the afterlife is that whatever you think of is instantly manifest. Now, in the physical plane, if we think of something, we try and manifest it, there's usually a nice long delay before
yeah.
it happens physically.
Very and long sometimes.
Sometimes very long. And we get lazy. You don't have to control your thoughts so much. In the afterlife, whatever, if you're thinking of a charging rhino, there it is, right in front of you, coming your way. So in order to allow people not to have to be constantly self-monitoring so they can sort of ease into the discipline consciousness needs in the afterlife, they will manage communities, and they will make sure that things don't manifest that don't belong in this safe setting.
Yeah.
And it makes sense in a way that if you've been doing spiritual work all day, you just want to kick back, relax, you don't want to have to be careful what you're thinking about.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. You know, I mean,
they do it for you.
Yeah,
it's called managed communities. That's how I described it.
So it's not. You don't think that we don't all like sort of automatically, a poor choice of words, but we don't like automatically migrate or move towards these different communities. You think people are helping our placement there, or do you? Does it have something to do with the amount of light or resonance that we give off, or
I think there is a certain amount of automatic shifting towards these places. You know, from the time of the channel material, the 1700s on at least, there's a common theme that like calls to like. And I think, again, we do this in life. You tend to gravitate towards people who are like-minded. You know,
True. You
tend to gravitate, if you're you know, really enlightened, you're going to tend to be more comfortable around others who are fairly close to your level than those who are, you know, mass murderers. And this continues perhaps even more in the afterlife because, again, consciousness is in control.
Mm.
And whatever you think of is what's there. So if you're thinking of, you know, like-minded people, if you're having common interests, you're going to sort of naturally gravitate. But I also believe there are spirit guides who try to facilitate that process, partly because, you know, when they meet you, they have a number of purposes. One of them is to help make sure you get to, you know, the best starting level for you to be at and to meet the others. But they also have an important job of orienting you to the afterlife, trying to explain how things work.
Mm.
They also have a job of trying to prevent contamination of the afterlife by your emotion. And I've been told this is true for everybody who crosses over, pretty much. I mean, maybe not Mother Teresa, but most people come over with this wide range of emotions that are out of control. Just, again, we're not used to the self-discipline of not sending that energy out into the world around us.
Yeah.
Because most people aren't sensitive to it, so we don't have to, you know, keep it to ourselves. Psychics, I think, have an edge on this because we have a little more practice controlling, you know, thoughts and emotions. So they will do this, I mean, not just for mass murderers and terrorist bombers, but who they definitely, you know, shield the rest of the afterlife from, with this sort of, they refer to it as like a vibrating energy shield. But they'll do it for everybody to a certain extent, just to reorient, you know, get over the strong emotions so that we don't, you know, freak out all the spirit world around us.
Do you think that, does everybody start sort of at the same level? I mean, if a lot of people believe that there are different spheres of
right. I agree with that.
Yeah, so might somebody that's more spiritually evolved start out at a different level than somebody else? Or do you think we all have this base afterlife that we begin our existence, our new existence in?
I think the immediate transition, you're very close to the earth plane. Everybody, I mean, when you're just first pulling out of the body, everybody has to start there by definition, right?
Okay.
But some people move much faster. So someone like, you know, Mother Teresa might go multiple levels up very quickly.
Right.
Others of us might just go one or two levels. Certainly, if you see people who have physical addictions, they may be more inclined to stay close to the earth plane and not go anywhere farther because they keep craving psychologically whatever it was they were addicted to. So even though they've lost the body, they still have the psychological aspect of the addiction that has to be broken.
Right. And you mentioned before, you know, light seems to be, you know, an underlying theme no matter where you go. And lots of times light is synonymous with love. So I wonder if our souls, you know, when we look at each other in the afterlife, I mean, do some souls seem to be have a higher degree of light, you know, and that's how the people recognize their so-called advancement, or just by looking at somebody, can I say, oh, they're more advanced than I am by their so-called appearance of have more intense light? Is that something you imagine?
Short answer is yes.
Okay.
I've gotten that from a number of different spirits, that they see those of us who are living as lights. And some of us are smaller than others. And, you know, I think the funniest experience for me was I'd been called to an emergency intubation for a code in the ER, and I saw the spirit standing, hovering by the doorway, nowhere near the body, and I'm like, this is not a good sign. And so, you know, after they pronounced it, I telepathically explained to the spirit what had happened. It was time to move on, go to the light, right? So
yeah.
I think I'm good. I'm heading back to the OR, and the spirit is faithfully following after me. And I'm like, no, no, you know, what are you doing? You're supposed to go to the light. And he's like, I am following the light. And I was like, no, no, the big light. So, but, you know, and I have heard that also, you know, I got some of my training from spiritualists in Casadega. And we used to do physical seances. And
right.
One of the messages that would sometimes come through was that they did see us as lights. And, you know, like I say, and when you get a group of people who are enlightened together, that group produces even more light.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, we're still connected to the source or the spirit.
And yeah, as you're telling that story, I keep thinking of your fellow doctors in the operating room watching you tell the patient to...
That's why I did it telepathically.
Okay.
You don't have, you know, they don't have ears. There's no need for you to say these things out loud.
Right.
I did all of my orienting always, even if I had doctors around me who, and some of them are open to the spirit realm. But even if I did, I always did everything silently, telepathically. There was simply no reason to have to say it out loud.
Yeah,
you know.
And I would imagine some of your colleagues, though, just saw that look in your eye, and they just perhaps thought you were seeing things that they didn't, and maybe some understood and some did.
I tried to be discreet.
Yeah.
By and large.
We are talking with Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. Her website is PamelaHeath.com. I encourage you to go on that. We're going to go to a short break, and we come back. We are going to come back to Dr. Heath in this fascinating discussion about the unseen world. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. This show is sponsored by the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, But first, use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with igive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search igive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you're looking for in their more than 900 online stores, like Red Envelope, L.L. Bean, 1-800-Flowers, the list goes on, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle winners have been drawn, and letters to the winners have gone out. The list of winners is on our website on the event page, and we thank everyone who has participated in this raffle as the proceeds support our free programs such as this radio show. Visitation rites with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Bobby Allison took place on April 20th. Thank you, Bobby. For those interested in contacting Bobby directly, please go to her website at bobbyallison.com, and Bobby is spelled B-O-B-B-I. Dessert and Discarnates with certified medium Lynn LeClaire and only 12 seats at this exclusive fundraiser on June 22nd is also sold out. Thank you, Lynn. For those wanting to be placed on a waiting list for the next Dessert and Discarnates event, please send an email with your request and contact information to events@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel, with free shuttle service to and from the airport as well as two local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Pre-sale opportunities to our members have gone out, and the discount ends on April 30th. That's this Monday. So make your reservations now. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo, and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Morton, joining our esteemed panel of presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. And I'm done, Bob. It's back to you.
All righty. I thank Dr. Heath for staying with us through all those announcements. I know, Pam, we talked a little bit earlier. You mentioned, I don't know, maybe our listeners didn't catch it, but in addition to your professional degrees and being a medical doctor, you're also very gifted intuitively. You are psychic. You have mediumistic abilities. And I know that you also, as you mentioned, had some training in spiritualism. And what always fascinates me is the... when I read about these physical mediums where they seem to be able to, a spirit seems to be able to move objects and tables, levitate and raps and direct voices and things of that nature. And I've interviewed some researchers, and they say very matter-of-factly that this is, all of these things are the result of psychokinesis from the living, and there's no spirit involvement at all. So do you have any thoughts on physical mediumship? And we want to address PK?
Well, it's always hard to tell, you know, who is the source or whether it's even just one person.
Right.
I think a lot of times it's a mixture of the energy of the living and that of those who are departed. I have to say I really enjoyed the physical seances I was involved in, but they were not the usual seances in that at the time I was studying anomalous healing under Reverend Mary Smiley in Casadega, and as her student, I got invited to private seances. None of these were open to the public. They didn't make any money out of it. It was just what some of the spiritualists did for entertainment. You know, you didn't turn on the television. No, you got together with your friends and you had a seance. And it was usually about six or seven people, and I was the only non-professional medium there. And like I say, no money crossed hands. It was only about, you know, having fun together.
Right.
And I saw some dramatic things. I think one of the most impressive was a whole group of us carried this big heavy wood table into a living room. And it was summer in Florida, so everyone was in short sleeves. There were no long sleeves for hiding rulers or other things. And we all had our hands on top of this heavy wooden table. And this one woman asked her mother, who had crossed over, to sort of show us that she was there. And we started having to chase this table all around the room. And I mean fast. This was not a slow-moving table. We were sort of racing around, hands on top of the table, almost ran us into one wall, and then she asked her mother to bring it back, and we ran, and we were following the table. Everybody's hands on top of it. So that was, I think, one of the more dramatic physical seances I was in.
Yeah. Sorry.
You know, I saw some other things, too. People's profiles changing to whomever they were channeling.
Right.
Now, how much of that is psychic? How much of that is, you know, my psychically sensing what was going on? How much is other things? I don't know. But, you know, you can certainly get physical phenomena from just the living. You can probably get it just from the dead, but I think most often it's a combo working together.
Right, so psychokinesis then, I guess by definition, is not limited to a living being, right? I mean, if we're a
correct
spirit,
yeah, it's mind matter interaction. So
right, okay.
So you don't need a body in that.
Could very well be both. You know what I wanted to ask you? You know, we talked a little bit about these levels that we might go through, these spheres. So, do you envision, like when you move from one level or one sphere to another, is it similar to the way that we think of it in the physical realm, in the sense that, okay, now one life is over and another life begins?
I don't think so. I think it's more that it's almost like when you talk about changing vibrations, okay,
right,
speeding up energy. You have a fan and it's stopped. You can see the blades, they look solid. You turn them on, it's a high vibration. You can't see it. It looks like it's invisible.
Yeah.
And I think it's more like that. It's not that you feel like you're changing, but that you sort of, the world sort of shifts around you. And to a certain extent, spirits will tell you they can shift their level of vibration, but it can be hard for them to go very far. So if you know, that's one of the advantages of meditating, is you're raising your own vibrational level. It makes it easier for them to connect with you, to
right,
slow down enough that they can sort of mesh with you. The higher you can get your own vibrations, the higher level of spirit it's easier to connect to. And what's sort of interesting is I know for me, I almost have trouble connecting with low-level spirits. And I have an easier time connecting with, you know, a higher, I'm not talking about real high, but, you know, higher level spirit.
Right.
And it's just a matter of where your vibrations are. And it's the same in the afterlife. They'll talk about how they want to see their friends who are at a different level, and they have to lower their vibrations down, and it can be hard to do, and it gets to a certain point where they can't come back.
Yeah. Well, I think that bodes well for you, Pam. I mean, you're communicating with the more enlightened beings now. Just imagine what
Well, I don't put my ego into this. You know, I think that one of the most important pieces of advice I got from the spirits is to realize that none of us have it right about the afterlife. So I'm going to go into it with an open mind.
Well,
and again, I think that's where it's nice to focus on it as a process instead of a place, because it gives you that sort of flexibility and openness to allow things to be whatever they are, and not have to have them try to fake it for you to get you to cross over.
Mm. You know, I've read, I don't know where, probably in your books, you know, that a lot of channeled material, that a lot of people in the spirit world describe the physical world, you know, as the dream world, you know, and the afterlife as the real world. I mean, is that something you might agree with?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's hard to say. You know, it makes me think of you know, some of the old Spanish plays. Calderón de la Barca, a very famous Spanish playwright who wrote La Vida es Sueño, which is Life is a Dream.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's all real. It's just that this has got a different purpose to it than that level. And we sort of come here, it's like, because we have specific advantages. The physical plane has something that the spirit realm does not, and that's called boundaries. And it has boundaries of space, boundaries of time, boundaries of person. And boundaries make it easier to make discrete choices and see how those discretions play out, how the ripples play out. Whereas in the afterlife, it's harder because you don't have that discrete boundary. And I think that's why they will tell you that they actually develop more slowly spiritually in the afterlife than they do in the physical plane. And that's why they come here. Because it gives them that advantage. And so to me, it's all real. It's just a different purpose.
Do you think that we all reincarnate or that we're given a choice as to whether we want to go back to the physical plane?
The messages I get is that we have a choice.
Right.
And not everyone makes that choice. Some people are strongly encouraged, nudged, elbowed, pushed into the choice.
Yeah.
But you know, especially like suicides who don't want to come back, they're strongly encouraged to go back again to sort of master that urge and not have to do that.
Mm.
Or to face whatever, you know, fears or issues. Or sometimes they're encouraged to come back to make recompense to others, or to allow others to make recompense to them.
Yeah.
But we have a choice, is what I've seen.
Mm.
And like I say, some people will say, no way am I ever going back, and they don't have to, but it means that their spiritual growth takes a little longer, and they're just okay with that.
Mm. I'm always, you know, fascinated by your different perspectives, because you... You wear so many different hats, you know. And I do remember you writing about having, you know, the psychic experience of your own for much of your life, but for a long time you seemed to refuse to acknowledge your ability. So, you know, was this like kind of a denial because of fear or because of your education as a scientist?
Because it was a whole change in worldview in terms of how I viewed myself.
Yeah.
I was always, from third grade on, I was a fanatic science fiction reader. So I always believed this sort of stuff was possible. But I never believed it was me. And then when I started having psychic experiences, it was such a shock to realize, because I had always thought that to be psychic, you would have had it from childhood on. And I may have had some experiences, you know, as a child, but I certainly didn't recognize what they were at the time. So I was like, how can this be? You know, I mean, I didn't grow up psychic. I can't be psychic now. And
yeah.
But I had too many undeniable experiences that I just, after a month, I finally got my mind wrapped around it. But I think it is very normal for people who develop psychic abilities as adults, which is more common than people think.
Mm.
Very common in the 30s, actually. That you have to change your identity. And that takes a little adjustment to figure out what is my identity. And then on top of that, there's a whole problem of having to relearn reality testing when you're psychic.
Mm.
Because when you're not psychic, it's very easy to tell what is and isn't reality, you know, because it's what you can touch, taste, smell. And then when you're psychic, you start to realize there's another dimension. I have to learn how to perceive things with consciousness. But that's where I think we get a foot up, shall we say, on the afterlife, because you start getting the practice of perceiving things with pure consciousness.
Practice, practice, practice.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it. But it took me about a month, and then I started experimenting with it. That was my scientist side.
Well, we have been talking with Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. You can check out her website at Pamela Heath, that's HEATH.com. There are articles, links, interesting reference works, her own books. include the PK zone, suicide, what really happens in the afterlife, handbook to the afterlife, and mind-matter interaction. There is a link on our website, an Amazon link, for these to purchase these books. And Pam, thank you so much for being with us. And there's so much more to talk about, so I hope you'll come back and talk with us again.
I would be happy to come back anytime. If I could just say, everybody has psychic abilities, so everybody can develop this.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate
it. I like
that. That's a good way to close. Thanks so much, Pam.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Barron, Eileen LaFada, Joanne Gerber, Lynn LeClaire, CJ, Rita Springer, David Haith, Pat Longo, Barbara Petillo, Doreen Malloy, Glenna Irwin, and Elizabeth McKenna. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. That was from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masura Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And here we are 2 years later, and now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.